January 14th, 2022. Six things I learnt migrating to the cloud. I've had the opportunity over the past 5 years to be involved in many different cloud migrations of all shapes, sizes and industries. From large-scale lift and shifts, native refactoring and even one or two cloud-to-cloud migrations. There are a couple of things I've learnt along the way that appear to remain true irrespective of size, scope or type of organisation. 1. The cloud provider you choose isn't the best technical fit, but the best cultural fit. There used to be a trend when organisations were moving to the cloud to ask the question, which cloud provider do we go with? Still occasionally see this in RFPs for big multinationals. This led to a lot of long conversations, commercial modelling, TCO comparisons and contract negotiations. After all this work, for which we were handsomely paid, you were still left with a fairly long list of trade-offs that you were buying into, and the decision was made based on an executive point of view associated with levels of comfort with various risks on the table. Saying the decision was based on trade-offs and risk is probably being a little kind. The truth is more often the whole exercise is one of confirmation bias to a decision that has already been made. So what drives that decision in the first place? What I've observed is that the decision is based not on commercials or on technical best fit, but on the alignment of cultural values between the cloud provider and the organisation. There are already some well-known tropes about this. You're a Windows shop, so you'll choose Azure. Most of your estate is custom applications on Linux. You'll choose AWS. Or you're building a data project, so you'll choose Google. Well, these are tropes for a reason, but let me add, there's something that's always missing from these things. Nuance. The culture of organisations that typically select Microsoft Azure aren't just those organisations with a heavy investment in Windows and the .NET framework. Microsoft are a big partner-centred organisation with a large ecosystem of partners, and many of their engagements with customers will involve alignment of multiple parties. What I've discovered is that organisations with a large number of vendors and partners, application vendors, service providers, etc., are culturally aligned with working in this same mode. Microsoft also appears to be the preferred platform for back office or traditional IT environments. Digital native organisations have been the mainstay of AWS since inception. Strong in retail, strong in ISV and SaaS providers. Now they are strong in every vertical and at the time of writing hold a dominant position in the market. Not just because of the first mover advantage, but because they shape their identity around transformation. Those organisations that have been self-selecting AWS are those whose move to the cloud was do it right, not do it fast. Infrastructure was rebuilt, not moved. Applications were refactored, not shifted. And in some cases, existing vendors were unseated by modernization. That's not to say that those more difficult, often legacy components don't migrate well. In fact, AWS has done a lot in writing services to support these environments, but it's just not aligned well with their culture or the culture of the organization selecting them. Google is still the corner case. They are the Think Different brand. They are the cloud provider that most folks associate with data services, and rightly so, it's their strongest area. Organisations that select GCP are more often than not cloud-native, greenfield and data-driven. What I've seen is that data is not just the strongest of Google services, but it's very much ingrained in their culture and how they see the world. Organisations where the infrastructure and even the applications matter less than the data and the insights they provide are the organisations that are most aligned with Google. So what about the multi-cloud story? If each provider has a different culture, how does this work in multi-cloud organisations? The multi-cloud organisations I've worked with are more often than not in that position based on different subcultures within the organisation rather than other technical reasons. Either different business units or different regions within an organisation have selected a different provider because it's different people who make the decisions. And actually, that's okay. Cloud, in general, is about being an enabler to business, and being an enabler means providing tools and services that people can use quickly, effectively, and actively want to keep on using. As this is really about the choice of people, the most effective cloud will be the one that the most number of people in the organisation get along with, and that means the one that most aligns with their own needs and values. 2. The TCO doesn't matter. Every cloud migration or modernisation activity I have seen, some more successful than others, has started in the same way. Build a Y cloud business case. At the better end of the scale, this is an investment case to justify budget, but at the worst end, it's a business case to track ROI for cloud versus keeping it in the data center. And yes, people still think this is a valid argument. Somewhere in the middle there is the tick box exercise business case, where the decisions have already been made and it's a paper-filling activity for governance reasons. In either of these scenarios, there is one thing that always comes up, the TCO, total cost of ownership, which is the detail of the financial case. This can range anywhere from the cost of project's cloud billing to a complete business case, including people, cost of risk, and even multi-cloud comparisons. There are many tools in the market now to help support this, all of which have their own focus areas and their own trade-offs. But it's clearly a market solving a big problem. I personally spent 2 years building and maintaining a model for exactly this. Ask me over drinks one day. The unspoken reality, however, is that the TCO really doesn't matter. In most cases, any model produced is never referred back to once the thing gets deployed in the cloud environment, and in the rare case that it is, there is a quick realization that there are so many known unknowns when modeling cloud spend, e.g. bandwidth and real-world compute usage, that the model quickly shows the impact of its long, long list of assumptions. My advice is to forget the TCO and even forget the ROI. If you're not in the cloud already, and there are many that aren't, or you're not investing regularly in transforming your applications, then the clock is ticking before you're forced to by the market. It's not a choice of if you'll be investing, it's just a case of when. It's also not a case of how much it's going to cost, which assumes it's a one-off project. But it's a case of how much you can afford to spend this year and next year, and what you want to do with that budget. 3. The vendors aren't going anywhere. Whether it's network, backup, patching, disaster recovery, or corporate applications, there is always a vendor, and rightly so. Most enterprise organizations will favor build versus buy when it comes to tools and applications, and this means that many large estates have hundreds of vendor applications in infrastructure. There is a prevailing and addictive ideology that moving to the cloud will allow an all-in approach to cloud-native services, reducing the vendor landscape to only the chosen cloud provider. This idea is very much supported by the hundreds of cloud-native services now available and the year-on-year growth in new services that makes negotiating long vendor contracts a much riskier bet than it used to be. Generally speaking, I support this ideological view. The decision should always be native first unless proven otherwise. That is where it's getting interesting, however. The cloud provider takes a wide and shallow approach to many of the services they develop, having set themselves into an annual cycle of releasing newer services and setting an expectation that wherever there's a problem, however niche, there'll be a tool or service to solve it. As a result, they're racing to be the first to market, and like any good product organization, they are releasing the basic feature set first to be followed with more advanced features months or years later. Most vendors, in contrast, have a small product set, specialize in one or two areas and go deep into those. It means that there are many cases where the vendors can provide functionality where the cloud provider services cannot, or at a price level that the cloud provider is unwilling to match. So what do we do about this? Well, the choice is to embrace the vendors, but to do so deliberately, tactically, not strategically, and with as short a time frame as it's reasonable to negotiate. You want to use those vendor technologies to meet your needs now, cost or features, but give yourself the option to continually review those choices and expect to replace them with cloud-native technologies in a couple of years' time. To use the language of Wardley mapping, vendors live in the product/rental space. Cloud providers dominate in the commodity space. Know where your applications and infrastructure are on their life cycle and make the right choices accordingly. 4. You need a toolbox. Cloud migration and modernization is a complex business. There are lots of standardized things. VM migrations, upgrades, IAC pipelines. But there are also a large number of areas that may be unique to your business, your industry, the types of applications you have, or where they are in their life cycle. Having been in many organizations and completed migrations of different sizes and types, the one thing that has allowed me and my team to be successful is ensuring that we have the right toolbox to use. What do I mean by that? I mean that for each of those 7 R areas, we have a potential solution no matter where the application is in its life cycle. Want to move your first-party Python app to containers? Tick. Want to migrate your SQL 2005 instance to SQL 2019 on a Linux Docker container? Tick. This requires a rich portfolio of options, some cloud provider tools, some vendor tools, and some custom-built tooling. The deeper you go, the more often you're reviewing your estate and asking the question, what's the next move? Then the more you build up a collection of options that you can use for this transformation and the next. The more options you have, the more agile you can be as a business. 5. All the things that might happen will happen. I suppose this is an obvious and inevitable statement for any project or product development of any significant size or duration, but I am reminded of this all the time. I've seen lots of examples of this that have come close to derailing many projects I've worked on. Services being down just at the minute you want to use them, or when you at least have time to waste, people not being available when you need them for so many reasons, some work, some personal, and my personal favourite, undocumented service edge cases. Ask any cloud engineer about those, there's probably a whole conference track in there somewhere. The point here is that every risk, every assumption you make should have a plan, and that's standard PM practice. But you should also test those plans, especially when there are regular risks and assumptions across multiple projects. No one needs to be in a position of twiddling their thumbs and going, well, we did document this risk, so we're just going to wait it out. If you do this and test these assumptions, you're less likely to find yourself in a war room scenario. The less of those, the better. 6. It takes a village. The last lesson that I wanted to leave you with is that just like any cultural change isn't just about changing the tools, any cloud migration or transformation isn't just about the toolbox you have to deliver it. It's fundamentally about the people. This is the people you have on your team, the people you're working with from the customer or the third parties. Any reasonably sized migration cannot be completed by a lone wolf who knows everything. It takes diversity of skills, of knowledge, and of experience in order to be successful. So be reminded to invest here first. Worry about the tools and the approaches second, and you'll find yourself moving forward to a better outcome.